That time of week again when Chira de Siena of cars.co.za is standing by to help out with the latest motoring news, some reviews, and of course answering your motoring questions. Just a reminder that if you would like to pose a question to Chira, the best thing to do is pick up your phone right now and dial us on 021-446-0567. If you need some time and need to explain things and send a longer email, do so during the week, please, anytime up to the start of the show on Wednesday, by mailing me on pippah@capetalk.co.za. You can also tweet Chiro at Chiro de Siena, but the easiest thing to do is to send your question to me so that we can filter it into the prep for each week's show. That is the surest way of getting an answer to your question. So Chiro, always lovely to have you with us on the line. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Pippa. It's good to be with you. I'm actually in Joburg again.
Okay.
So, I'm in my second home. It's great that we can obviously connect on the telephone.
What are you driving in Joburg, Chiro? Are you Ubering everywhere?
No, I've got a wonderful rental Nissan Micra, which if you want, we can review, but I don't recommend it. I'd rather chat about the BMW 8 Series, if you don't mind, because that was an interesting one.
Well, sounds like a far more comfortable drive for starters, so let's rather talk about the 8 Series. Tell us more.
Yeah. No, well, significantly more power than a Micra, I can promise you that. So it's got the engine from the M5, which is one of the most powerful BMW engines they've ever made, V8 twin turbo. And just, I'm not sure cars need to be this fast or powerful, if I'm honest. I mean, I filmed it on a closed road, you know, mm-hmm. so I could really stretch its legs. And the way it accelerated from 100 to 200 was faster than most cars accelerate from 0 to 100. It gets to scary speeds, just scary, scary fast. It just left me thinking, you know, is this actually entirely necessary? But I suppose it, you know, luxury and power, I suppose, sort of go hand in hand in the car world. And it's a very luxurious car. It's a very premium experience in the cabin, and the ride quality is very comfortable, very quiet. And I suppose in all of that, you know, you do want a powerful engine. It's a return to sort of a past glory for BMW. They had an 8 Series, which they stopped making 20 years ago. And that for me was a really iconic car. I don't know if you can picture it, sort of had pop-up headlights, very long,
yes,
sleek design. Yeah, mm-hmm. Beautiful car. And I don't know if this latest one is going to be remembered as a classic, if I'm honest. It sort of has all the right ingredients of what would make a sort of exceptional car, but it just left me feeling a little flat. Can't really put my finger on why, to be honest. It sort of ticks all the boxes, but it doesn't seem to have as much character as I was hoping it was going to have. Yes, I suppose if you're looking for, you know, a really big, expensive, powerful coupe, and you have 1.9 million rand to spend, it's definitely, definitely not a bad option. But, I think for sort of more comfort than, and you might look at a Merc, or for something a bit more sporty, you might look at a Porsche. I suspect that's where, you know, quite a few buyers will end up spending their money in that segment.
Okay, so the more comfortable Merc, the more sporty Porsche. Hmm. 1.9 million rand. What sort of warranty do you get with a car? Sure, do you know?
I think BMW's standard warranty is 5 years. I imagine it applies to all their cars. I can't see it being different for the 8 Series. It's also the kind of car, you know, in the premium segment, the depreciation is terrible, in cars like that. And you do have to expect to take a hit on it. I suspect that if you have your heart set on an 8 Series, it will make you happy. It's the sort of car you might sort of hang on to, perhaps. It's definitely the sort of car that I don't think you want out of warranty. You're probably going to need to have deep pockets to keep that thing going. when it's sort of 6-7 years old.
Okay, so that's the new BMW 8 Series. Lucky you, at least you get to try them out, Chiro. Most of us will never get close to them in the first place. Okay, also really interesting bit of motoring news that Ford has launched an electric Bucky. Tell us more.
Yes, it's just a prototype at this stage, but the story is really interesting. So there's a startup called Rivian, R-I-V-I-A-N in America, and they debuted this electric pickup. And then Ford liked it very much, and they bought the entire company for $7 billion. So whoever started Rivian is now on an island in the Bahamas somewhere, obviously. The idea was to take the technology and develop a pickup, an electric pickup. And the really interesting thing about, you know, Ford's F-Series series trucks is how unbelievably popular they are. And I had a feeling this morning that it might be the best-selling car in the world or car series in the world. And it's close. It's the second best. But to put you, to sort of put the audience in mind, I suppose, of how many F series trucks are sold around the world, it's outsold the Beetle globally, sort of in all time. So okay. It's unbelievably popular. And if the world is going to go electric, if we're going to, you know, try to get off fossil fuels in our cars, we do need to have electric pickups or electric buggies. And it's so exciting to see that a huge company like Ford is pushing into this space. And they launched the car in quite dramatic fashion. They put 40 Ford F-150s on a train, and the electric F-150 pulled the entire train, weighing 450 tons. So sure. It was quite an impressive display of the power available. And it really is a powerful bucky. I mean, in a sort of top-end bucky these days, you're looking at a power output of maybe 150 kilowatts. In this Ford F-150, you're looking at a power output of 512 kilowatts. So it's just, you know, sort of three and a bit times more power available. And in sort of the, you know, bucky world, I think that counts for something.
Achira, I mean, I can't help sitting here wondering about the use of an electric bucky, because when I think of a bucky, I think of a vehicle that is designed to drive long distances and carry heavy loads a long way and, you know, operate in farmlands, etc. And that doesn't gel with what I know about electric vehicles as they currently stand, which is that limited range is always an issue. What has to change before we see a vehicle like this practically being usable?
I think that in America, the use case for buggies is slightly different.
Okay.
In that it's often somebody's only car. And it's the car they use on a daily basis, and it's a car that is maybe mostly city bound. In South Africa, we're a little bit different. I suppose some owners here do only have a bucky, and that's fine. But I think we do expect our buckies to be able to do very long distances and to be able to survive in the middle of nowhere for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that it's going to be a while until the perception around it changes. The tech around it, though, is moving extremely quickly. And the nice thing about a bucky is you've got it's a lot of car to fill with batteries. So you know, if you're trying to make a sort of, you know, small city hatchback, there's not just that much sort of literal real estate in the car to fit batteries. Whereas in a bucky, you've got this entire massive flat chassis that you can just essentially load with batteries. And that's pretty much what Rivian did. So you are looking at probably a usable range of about 500 kilometers, which is a lot less than, say, a diesel bucky can do these days. But it's not too far off what a petrol bucky can do. And people have moved away from petrol buckies, admittedly, for that reason. But I do suspect that the pace that things are changing and the pace of battery technology, it's not going to be too long until there's something, you know, really, really usable and that makes a lot of sense for a lot of motorists.
Okay, am I not mistaken in thinking that I saw Tesla launching an electric bucky just a day or two ago, or giving an update on the near launch of an electric bucky?
Correct, yeah. So they've been teasing it for a while. They want a piece of the bucky market in America, and obviously they're an electric company, so they're pushing in that direction. And Elon Musk, I think yesterday or the day before, said that they're 3 months away from the reveal. Now, he also sometimes says that we would have been on Mars, you know, last week Tuesday, so I don't take everything he says entirely seriously. But no, they have been working on it for a very, very long time, and if there is one company that can get it right quickly, it is probably Tesla. So I'm hoping that he sticks to his word, and we do see it in about 3 months' time.
Okay. Interesting times. Mm. Thanks for the update on both the Ford electric bucky and the Tesla. Before we move on to listener questions, you mentioned that the F-Series is the second best-selling series in the world. What's the top of the list?
Corolla. Corolla. Yeah. So first place, Corolla. Second, F-Series. Third, Beetle. I think fourth is Golf. It's actually a really interesting list. And then fifth, I think, is a Lada, which was made in Russia almost exclusively. But, you know, they sold sort of 70,000 million of them. So that's the fifth on the list, I think.
Okay. Mere curiosity prompting me to ask. Thanks so much. All right. Let's go to the lines. Our first caller is through. A reminder that you can phone in on 021-446-0567. Stephanie and Hermanus, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Pippa and Shiro. I just wanted to find out, we're thinking of trading in to economize and to get a Mercedes B180 CDI. It's already got 132,000 on the clock, and it's a 2013 model. And I just wanted to know, I mean, do they have got quite good longevity? And, you know, we do quite a lot of up and down in the village traveling, and then the odd long distance. I mean, that's really what I'm trying to find out. Would it be a good option for that kind of mileage and so on?
Shira, your thoughts on that?
So it's the CDI, the diesel B180.
CDI, she said, yes. Sorry, we're just having a little bit of a problem juggling the two lines there. Let me try and get them both on together if we can. Chira, so it is the diesel.
Okay, yes. No problem. So I mean, assuming everything, you know, runs 100%, then yeah, you'll definitely save, you know, on your running costs in terms of fuel. Where it gets a little tricky with diesel motors is they're statistically not less reliable than petrol motors, but the individual components thereof are more expensive to replace in a diesel engine. So your parts price comparison on, say, the injectors, for instance, will be more for a diesel than they would for the equivalently sized petrol motor. So that's just something to keep in mind. The other issue that I would look at is, off the top of my head, I'm trying to think if that car was sold with a CVT gearbox or a traditional auto box. It's something I would ask because, if I'm not mistaken, the lifespan of a CVT gearbox can be sort of as short as 7 years, depending on sort of a bunch of factors. So it's possible that if it's an auto, it could be a CVT, in which case the CVT might have to come up for repair, belt replacement, or even entire replacement of the unit. And that can be very, very pricey. So I would sort of look into the running cost, speak to the sort of service manager at Mercedes-Benz. If you're buying from a franchise dealership, even if you're not, I would phone a service manager and just ask what are the sort of standard services that have to be done on the car. I suspect also you're coming up to a timing chain service or a cam belt service, which is going to need to be done on the car as well. And that can be very pricey. So I wouldn't have those figures off the top of my head for you, but it's the research that I would do if I was purchasing the car.
Thank you very much. That's extremely helpful. Thank you so much
for your call. Good luck with the purchase. Appreciate your call. Right, let's go to a voice note, which was sent to 0725671567.
Hi, Pippa. It's Sean here. Pippa, I just would like to know what your guests think of the new Polos, especially the 1 liter TSI's comfort line. I'm interested. I might just want to hear his opinion. Thank you.
Thanks, Andre. What do you think, Chira?
I've driven it quite extensively, actually, and I was impressed. You know, Volkswagen really struggles to make a bad product. They're not great at emissions, but they are quite good at making cars. And the Polo is pretty much for me the best car in the segment. If I was to live with a car in that segment, it's, you know, it's spacious. The interior is very high quality. I found the ride quality to be really, you know, really premium. And for about $280,000. I think for the comfort line, you know, before you tick a few boxes, it is pricey, but it's not too far off the rest of the market. And it is going to, you know, deliver a better experience, sort of noticeably better experience, than say something like a Suzuki Swift, which is maybe $100,000 less. You are getting a slightly more luxurious experience out of it. And that being said as well, you know, the other thing about VWs is they just hold their value really well, which, you know, which like Toyota is what sort of helps them retain their market share in this country. Be aware with the Polos that the VWs that you do only get a 3-year warranty, which is, I think, something to keep in mind, depending on how long you want to keep the car for as well. But as a product, I would say it's if not second best in the segment, then the best car in the segment to drive.
Okay, thank you, and good luck, Jean-André. Thanks for your voice note. Paul in Durbanville sent a question. He is trying to make the decision between a new BMW 3 Series or the Mercedes-Benz C-Class. If he would, if Chira could provide any advice, I'd appreciate it, he says.
So I did a, if it helps at all, we've got a very detailed comparison video on our YouTube channel with the brand new 3 Series and the outgoing C-Class. And I suppose that is an important thing to keep in mind, is that next year C-Class will be replaced. Okay. So it's a little bit difficult to compare what is essentially a brand new car with a brand new chassis in the 3 Series to what is a sort of six-year-old car in the Mercedes, even though the C-Class has received a massive facelift, I think, last year or the year before. Product for product, I would say if you're looking for a sporty drive, then, you know, the Beamer ticks more boxes for me. If you're looking to sort of be a bit more relaxed, a bit more comfortable, then I think the Merc's better set up for that. So that's quite an important distinction to make. And then in terms of pricing, they're not too far off each other in list price. I think they started about 620 each, but for the base models. But the thing with the German cars is that they get very pricey very quickly. And, you know, the 3 Series we tested had a base price, I think, of 640, but the car that we tested was spec'd to 911,000 Rand. Yeah. So 270K worth of extras, which is an entire Polo, as we've just discussed. Yeah. So, you know, so you do need to be very careful. And I think also what happens is, you know, the car makers have these great build, you know, sections of their website where you can go build your ideal car. And yes, you can get your ideal car. It'll just take sort of 4 to 6 months to arrive from Germany. That's so true. What generally happens is they say, well, you know, well, we've got this one on the floor. It's got almost everything you want. You know, would you be interested kind of thing? And it's usually more expensive than, you know, the one you have in mind. So I think sometimes, you know, patience can save you a bit of money and get you the exact car that you like. But you know, product for product, there are two products that I would really be happy living with on a day-to-day basis. If I had to fall on either side, really tough one. I think I might just take the Beamer if I was forced to choose.
Okay. Thanks for the advice. Yeah. And Paul, I hope that was a helpful comparison for you. Do go and check out that website, the web video that Chiro mentions on cars.co.za. I believe you've got a voice note on diesel consumption. Let's take a listen.
Hi there. I've got a quick question about my fuel consumption. I have a 2009 Audi 2-litre TDI Avant, and I should be getting, according to everyone who apparently knows about these things, about 800-900 kilometers per tank, but I'm only getting maximum about 610 kilometers per tank. I do a lot of city driving, lots of short distances, lots of stop starts, quite a lot of hills, you know, in and around the city center. Is that enough of a reason to give me 200-300 less kilometers per tank? I've done a diagnostics on it. It all came out clear. I bought some diesel cleaner, that made no difference. So my question really is that just what it is and what I should be accepting? Thank you so much.
Chiro, that's an interesting one, because I know you've often spoken, obviously manufacturers make certain claims about consumption which are only in ideal driving conditions. But if she's being told 800 to 900 should be the standard, what would, is the driving, the short distances, etc., alone enough to account for the 600 that she's getting?
So, I mean, statistically speaking, and I suppose just from a technical perspective, you're always going to get better consumption on the open road than in city driving. So you will see a drop. It's very difficult to comment on older cars because you never know what that car's been through, how it's been maintained, if it's had any sort of breakdowns, anything that it could affect the consumption. If it was a brand new car, I could say, well, you know, here's the claim, here's your reality is, you know, this far off, and there's something, you know, that can be done about it. But, you know, cars sort of degenerate in different ways. So what I would do is I'd actually take it on a long run and see what you get. You know, put the cruise control on, put it to 120. I don't know, you know, maybe book a night somewhere that's up the coast where you've always wanted to go see Knysna, wherever it is, and just do a real world test of what the car is entirely capable of. And then you'll have at least a figure to compare your day to day driving figure to. I know that sounds like quite an effort and quite a laborious way of getting this done, but I'm not sure how else you could get a real world test of what the car is capable of. And like she says, she's done the diagnostics, done all the rest of it. So if there's no obvious problem with the car, then I suppose it just comes down to the fact that the car is being used in a way which is not optimal for the engine and what the engine can, you know, can optimally consume. And I'm sorry, I don't have a much more helpful answer than that, but these things are really, really tricky. And I suppose, you know, doing that test might at least just give you some sort of idea of whether the car can perform as everyone thinks it should.
I thought it was a really good answer, Chira. Thank you so much. And always great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Chira de Siena of cars.co.za. Please check out the website and their YouTube channel as well for all kinds of latest motoring news and comparison videos, etc. Remember, you can send a question for Chira by emailing me on pippah@capetalk.co.za, or you can tweet him @Chira.